Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today I'm joined by Miki Yokoyama, Managing Director and Partner at Aurum Impact, the family office that's redefining how capital drives climate innovation. From carbon removal to circular economy, Miki and Aurum Impact are proving that purpose and performance can actually go hand in hand. Miki, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. We finally made it. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I look forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Miki, so family offices are usually, quiet operators. What made Aurum want to step into the spotlight in climate tech?
Yeah, good question. So I asked the same question once to Hendrik Goldberg, or Jan-Hendrik Goldberg, who is one of the co-CEOs of Goldberg, the construction company that's also behind Aurum Impact. And he said, well, naturally, as co-CEOs, he and his brother are in the spotlight anyway, and he also sees it as a part of his responsibility to use that spotlight for the topics that he cares about and he thinks are important also to drive. So, I think many family offices are quite the opposite in Germany. I hope that that will change in the coming years, but the Goldbergs are a little bit different.
Nice. Good to hear that. I know that you invest in both, right? Startups and funds. What's one surprising way those two relationships differ?
So I think with funds, so as an LP investing into VC funds, it's more a financial transaction, I would say. So it's not as important who is really one of your LPs. Whereas startups really look into who's my investor, who do I have a good relationship with, or who can I imagine working together with for the next X years. And I think that's the main difference for one. And then secondly, I think also market dynamics are a little bit different, whereas startups sometimes can also choose, I feel, here, if they're really, really good and have a really good business model or innovation or whatever it is. They will get a few term sheets and will closely look at who is investing in them. And usually funds or VC funds, the amount is also bigger that they're raising for a fund, are less, or oftentimes it's not too difficult to get into a fund. Some are very competitive. UVC Partners just closed a very competitive round. And also in the US, I think there are some. So it's highly consolidated. For some funds, I think it's a different game. But for the majority of funds, it's not too difficult to get in as an LP, right? So that's also the biggest second difference, I would say.
Nice, right. Speaking of, VCs and fund managers, what's one thing that instantly tells you this fund manager, has kind of what it takes to invest?
Telling this instantly, I think, is difficult, but the two types of stories that fund managers tell, and I think one begins with the money story. Mm-hmm. So telling the prospective LP that climate or impact investing is the economic opportunity of your time, and you can get very rich when you will invest in my fund. Uh-huh. This is one story opener. And the other story that other people use is the topic or the thesis of how they came to this topic and why they think people should act on it, or what made them start their impact fund, what values drive them to pursue this kind of career. And I value the second story much more, because I always feel when you do something that you're passionate about, that you feel is right, you will always find a good way to be successful in that area. Mm-hmm. And for success, unfortunately, is still kind of defined or also measured by financial success. But I also think this will also carry you through many challenges, obstacles, makes you more creative to get to the or stay on the path and get to your goal, rather than when you just follow the money and your heart is not in it. And I also feel that when you only look at the commercial success in a fund, I know also that most LPs are looking for that. So I can understand that most people or most fund managers open with that line. Mm-hmm. I think it won't get you very far. It's just without the soul somehow. 100%. And I feel like if you're doing this as a fund manager just to get richer now, I think it lacks something that will make you a really, really good investor and see the important topics, the nuances, create a good portfolio, work well with the founders and all these things.
Yeah. So I also have heard that, especially at the beginning, if someone is raising like for first time managers or first time fund managers, for LPs, it's not even like not about the thesis of the fund or like how much money will they make or like what's the kind of passion or story behind it, but actually who the person is, like who is the general partner that is, who's the main person raising this fund. And what's the background? What's the story? What's the experience, and so on? Is it true?
Of course. These are like all the things that I said now are for me like the initial impression that I get of a person, right? But of course, what we look at is the whole picture. Like, what experiences this GP or fund manager have? Who are the other GPs? Are they a complementary team? What's their track record? What's their investment thesis, but also what's their USP in a very, very crowded market, and all these other things that you naturally look at when you look at analyze a fund.
So Miki, what's the biggest disconnect between, you know, how family offices and VCs talk about impact, and how do you actually, how do we bridge that?
I don't think there's one difference or that there's really that big of a difference. I think it depends. I think for very institutional family offices, they think very much like also like a VC, I would say. But then again, also depends again on the person and also his or her experience with the topic impact. I think many have not quite yet grasped the difference between impact and sustainability. So I see them as two sides of a coin. Impact is what you really do with your product, your business model, what you seek to change or what challenge you really want to kind of address with your business. And sustainability is what you do on the inside, right? The culture you create, how you source your materials and set up your supply chain, what materials you use in your production. That's more the how you do it, not the what, right? And I think that's oftentimes sort of intertwined, which is for me also sometimes difficult when people talk about sustainability. I think sustainability is everything that makes you successful long term. That can also be an oil company or a weapons company or a gambling company, right? They can be very sustainable in their operation, but it will never be an impact company, so to say. But back to your question, I think it depends highly on the individuals who drive the investments or the investment strategy. So I cannot really say that there is a difference between family office and VC. It's dependent on the individuals.
Yeah. So Miki, actually coming back to what we were talking about previously before this question, like kind of assessing the fund managers. Like, I know that due diligence at Aurum is known to be no joke.
Really? Who told you that?
I have my sources. What's one red flag and one green flag that always stand out to you?
Do you mean when we look at a fund or at a company?
Maybe at a fund.
Actually, probably it's the same thing. I think it's founder or GP manager or like fund manager personality. I think when I look at people, whether it's fund managers or also founders, I always imagine or think about, could I see them in a dinner with Uwe or Hendrik Goldbeck? Could I sit them next to one of the brothers? And if the answer is no, I think, I don't know if my assessment is right, right? But then I think it's not a good match. But of course, there's so many other things. It's always the full picture that makes you invest or not invest, right? Mm-hmm. So the business model can be great or the tech can be amazing. But if you don't have a founder team that you believe can scale the company, then it's also difficult, of course, to invest. So so many things have to come together. But I believe, of course, the team is crucial because they will also pick the right. They know that it is the right timing. They know how to commercialize the product, or I mean that it is necessary to commercialize the product. They will know when to take advice from external or from other people and when to also follow their own path. So all these things. So team, I think, is crucial.
Nice for both. Exactly. I would say like both startups and funds. Generally, it's down to people, right? Every time, eventually.
Yeah, always.
Let's talk about CapEx, because like CapEx is a beast in climate tech. What's one solution or approach you think we are still underusing?
Definitely project finance and debt finance. I mean, there are facilities or initiatives out there, and I think more and more awareness is on these financing instruments. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, we come from a long time where VC was focusing almost solely on software. That has changed in the last 4 or 5 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. So all these thoughts around CapEx and setting up a demo plant, a production facility, is not very common in VC, or hasn't been very common in VC. So it's natural that we need to also think about new financing instruments, but we can be and should be much, much quicker now, especially now in a time of poly crisis and all the things that are going on. I think it's crucial that especially Germany also steps up its game in terms of speed and less bureaucracy, less rules, more also commercial freedom in some sense, to scale and to get the support that they need to scale.
Yeah, like everyone is talking about it. The entrepreneurs, investors, like just come on.
Yeah.
Like we have to do it, like as Europe, to kind of stay relevant. And Miki, I know that you've worked with giants like Allianz and BMW also before. What did corporate life, if anything, teach you that you now bring to the family office world?
Mm-hmm. If anything, I think for one, definitely structure. Uh-huh. So I think to approach things in a very structured, organized, logical way. I think you cannot survive really in a corporate structure without structure or without fitting into like this, big structure. If you're a puzzle piece that cannot connect rightly with the other puzzle pieces in the system, right? I think that's one thing. But also, I mean, I work a lot with B2B startups and understanding how big companies work. Is, I think, very helpful also for the founders that we invest in, who are at a very early stage and oftentimes quite underestimate how slow, how difficult, how political processes are in corporates and what they need to look out for when they want to close a corporate as well. So I think these two things, definitely.
And when you work with those startups, I wanted to talk about metrics for a sec. Because impact is quite messy. What's one framework that actually cuts through the noise?
There is no framework, I feel, that cuts through the noise, which is a sad answer probably, but there are different frameworks. I feel almost every VC has its own framework, which is also okay. I think we just look out for how they have incorporated the topics impact and ESG within the investment process, within investment decisions, and then also portfolio management and contracts. So if we see that there is a solid integration into all these four points, whether it doesn't really matter how it's really done, then that's quite okay for us. But I also see there is desperate need for standardization, because for LPs, it's very difficult to judge, is this now a solid impact fund or not? And everyone has their own approach. It has a justification too, because I can understand that some VCs just say this approach is working for me much better than another one. And then one is focusing on LCAs and the next one is focusing on social topics. Well, you can't really apply an LCA in some cases or in most cases. So it's quite difficult to put a framework that one size fits all. Mm. It would make life easier in some ways. But then again, impact is also a topic that comes with complexity, and that comes with the necessity to be open to see the different frameworks and the different approaches. That's my opinion. I don't know. I guess there's some others out there who have brought out a framework or invented a framework and think this should be really used and applied for all. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to be flexible and adapting to the different approaches, using them and seeing also how can we learn from one fund to also give advice to the next fund where we see a good best practice here and there.
I love it. I actually think that's the right way. You should stay open and, you know, kind of agile and act fast and adapt. And even as a family office, and then like starting from family offices to fund to startups. I think that's the right way to do.
The challenge is also, though, that there is a lot of room for impact washing then, right? So people who are new to the impact investing asset class, it's very tough for them to figure out, is this now well done or not? And if there is no framework that can be applied, or like something like a certification where they know, oh, okay, they're using this and this method, and that's basically above standard or standard. And if there's nothing like that, it makes it very tough for newcomers to go into this asset class. And this is also a problem, because we desperately need more money in this asset class. And there are not enough people looking at this asset class. And I think standardization would be one puzzle piece to make that change that.
Miki, I like it. Miki, speaking about your investing strategy, Aurum's investing strategy, if other family offices borrowed just one idea from your playbook, what should it be?
I guess invest more into impact. I think many family offices invest in traditional asset classes like real estate and public equities. Then some, or more and more, are looking into private equity and then VC. But then going into impact investing is for many still a very new asset class, I would say. And it takes different players, right, to drive this. For one, it would be the family officers or family offices, but of course also many next generations within families and family offices, they drive this shift as well to say, hey, why don't you look more into this asset class? And I think it takes both parties to be open here and to add this into their investment thesis or investment strategy, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And looking ahead, what's one shift in the climate tech funding landscape you hope to see in the next 5 years, and that the one you're betting on?
Typical question. I think I would differentiate here. I think what I'd like to really see is that the economy will put a real price to what the planet gives us for free right now, like clean air, water, soil, and the whole ecosystem that is currently cleaning up all the pollution that we're producing or putting out there. And I think, back in, let's say, 2021, no one was thinking about energy, right? Because it was just there. It was so cheap and it was just there. You didn't have to really care about it. It just came for very cheap price from Russia, let's say, mostly from Russia. And then suddenly, with the Ukraine war, we started to think about it. Oh, energy. Oh, we're dependent from Russia. Oh, what happens if that doesn't come anymore? And then this started a whole discussion, but like a whole new conversation around, for one, sovereignty, but also what do we do if it's not there anymore? Because we're so dependent on energy, obviously, for our everyday life, for production, for transportation, everything. And I think the same is happening with water. we're just taking it for granted. I mean, we open our tap and the water is coming out, or we use the toilet, we flush the toilet, everything's gone. But yeah. What if this doesn't work anymore? What if there's no water anymore? What if, what if there's no water anymore? And I think in many parts of the world, we already see this problem. And it's, of course, not a problem in Munich right now, and also not in most of Central Europe, but it will come at some point. And I think this is a conversation that we're not having yet, because we have so many other problems at the moment, so many other challenges. But I think it's the same thing that will hit us with water. It's the same thing that will hit us with biodiversity and also soil health. And it's so funny because so many people laugh about, oh, we care about the hamster or the hedgehog or the bird so-and-so. But it's what I think is not really understood yet, that one species is kind of within a big ecosystem, and the whole ecosystem
is all connected.
It's all connected, and it gives us the air that we breathe that we don't realize here in Europe in the privileged situation that we're in. And then second, the water that we get out of the tap, and then also third, the food that we eat. And that's where I'm always stunned, that people that love, oh, do we have to kind of care about this kind of frog and this kind of bird? No, it's not about the individual small frog or bird or whatever animal that is, but it's more about the whole thing that is all connected. And if one thing gets out of balance, and unfortunately already everything is out of balance, then it will hit us, and then it'll be too late. It's like, you don't brush your teeth for like 4 years in a row, and then you go to the doctor or to the dentist, and all your teeth have to be taken. And you think, like,
crazy. Damn, it's
maybe I should just every day thought about brushing my teeth. So it's like little things that will hit you very hard in the end if you don't take care of them now. So I think putting a real price to nature, I think, is one thing that I would hope to see as a development. But betting
on... We have no choice.
We have no choice. That is true. Or people will suffer I think the other option.
Or your son, my daughter, like, they will suffer, right?
Yeah.
Or their children will suffer whenever it comes. But it will come. We have to do something about it. Yes, 100%. No choice there. Miki, maybe to have some fun. At the end, I wanted to play a game with you. I started doing that recently with all my guests. It's kind of a rapid fire questions that I shoot at you, and you give me answers to them. If you're up for it.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. What if I can't come up with an answer?
Yeah, let's see. Whatever you can answer, let's answer. But I'm sure you'll answer all of them. Come on.
Okay.
So you ready?
Yes.
Let's go. What's one belief about investing or tech or, I don't know, life in general, you were totally wrong about?
That's a very tough and philosophical question also.
Yeah.
When I look at the investment world, and it's quite a broad answer. I think in the beginning, when I started looking at startups or working with startups, I think I didn't see the big change that AI would bring. There was back in 2017, 2018, I think. So still the first AI startup started to emerge in Germany, I'd say. OpenAI, I think, was founded in 2015. So then it hopped over from the US to Europe. And I didn't really think about how big of a change that would bring.
Nice. Interesting. So you're an AI skeptic. Come on, Miki.
Not anymore, right? Not anymore. I mean,
no, not anymore. No. I know.
I'm still an AI skeptic, but I don't, I mean, in a different way now.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Nice one. If you could steal one skill from any founder or investor, what would it be?
I mean, I don't know of any founder or investor that has that, but I would like to have a photographic memory. I'd just like to remember things much better. I can remember the most useless things, but then I can't come up with something that I should actually remember. So, yeah.
Nice. I like it. What's the most brilliant person in your phone contacts?
I'd have a tough time naming one, I think. because I know many really, really nice and brilliant people. It would be unfair, I think, to single out.
I know, it can get you into troubles. Yeah, these questions are designed in a way that it can cause some troubles to people answering them, just to have some fun, you know?
I mean, a politically correct answer, I think, is always my mom, right?
Nice. Amazing. I love it.
I'd pick my mom then.
Yeah, I always say my wife, you know, also.
That's a good one,
right?
Too.
You have to, like, what other choice do you have? Miki, what's the most non-obvious skill that makes someone a great investor?
Empathy. I think, yes. Yes, I think seeing and understanding people, asking questions instead of just sending messages, I think is a very important skill to have to nice. Yeah, be able to understand what drives people, how you can mm-hmm. help them. Yeah.
Love it. What's one piece of wisdom that everyone believes, but you think is total bullshit?
I think being commercially successful will make you happy.
Nice. If you had to assemble the ultimate VC dream team, like a three people to start a fund with, who's on the list and why?
I would have no idea. And there's so many really good investors out there, I'd say, but I'd have, again, trouble really picking out just three people. Uh-huh. Maybe I'd just to pick my three best friends, but they would make not, I don't know if they'd make really good investors, you know?
Okay.
But just to have, because I would love to work with them, but too tough of a question, Marcin.
Okay. Miki, so let's move on to the next one. What's the best and worst piece of advice you've heard for a person raising a fund?
You mean a piece of advice that a fund manager got?
Like a person raising a fund. Like, what was the best piece of advice that you would give or you heard or you received and the worst one?
I think the best piece of advice I would give is know your LP. Because uh-huh. many don't really care about finding out who the LP really is and what drives the LP and so forth, but just send out their standardized pitch. And I think that doesn't work for everyone. And I think you'd have more success tailoring it to an LP. Mm-hmm. Worst advice, I think just focusing on commercial success and commercial numbers mm-hmm. and like running after the financial metrics or financial return. Mm-hmm. For me. But could be different for others.
Now let's give one. Let's think about the next generation, as we were already talking. But let's maybe give one advice to them as well. What would be your advice to young people who want to raise a fund and invest in startups?
I guess create experiences or gather experience or gain experiences that are relevant for an investor, either as an operator, I'd say, mm-hmm. in your own company that you know how to scale and drive. And, also lead a company and then also to gain experience with financing rounds, or on the other side, gain experience as an investor, whether it's with a big company or also building your own angel track record. I think that's a paramount to have a solid track record somehow in a relevant mm-hmm. field before you raise your own fund.
Makes sense. Miki, last one and the toughest one, but maybe not. Let's see. Describe the rest of your life in five words.
Adventurous. Mm-hmm. Family. Learning, healthy, that was four, and impact.
Nice. I love it. Thank you so much, Miki. And now you're fully known to the world after answering all those questions that they're specifically designed to get to know, to dig deep into your soul and to get to know you better. Miki, thanks so much for the time
you took to join us on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you. I think people will love it. I loved it. I hope you had fun as well.
I had lots of fun. Thank you for asking all the tough questions. I think the people questions were much more difficult than the last one, but I really enjoyed our conversation.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Miki, and I hope to see you soon, either Munich or Barcelona or wherever.
Likewise. Thank you. Ciao.